Hey, what's going on, my friend? Microphone is low again. Why? Who lowers this thing? Or maybe it just, could it be it's on this stand? Could it be that it just naturally? It seems tight. Whatever. Okay, that's just behind-the-scenes stuff. Okay, my friend, let's... You can edit all that stuff out as you usually do. Nobody ever hears this stuff. It's just all they hear is after I say 3, 2, 1. Right? That's all they hear. That's good. Because who would want to hear this stuff? All right, Reg, are you ready? Because I am. Let's do this thing here. I'll give you the three S's and I'll give you the countdown, you give me the music, and I'll give you a podcast. Put it in the book, number 433, all right? Star, smile, strong. Get my instrument ready. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, listening is important, but getting out in the world and telling everybody about it is just as important. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you've been hearing since May of 2016... I hope you'll go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section on the website, and then go to the prompt for this specific podcast, and enjoy some of the amazing and groundbreaking podcast work that we've been doing on this podcast for oh so many years. Just keep scrolling down and loading more. Timely, interesting, quirky, informative, entertaining, goofy, smart, silly, poignant, superfluous, whatever word you want to describe, it's all there on this podcast. We've done a lot of these. This is episode 433. And so, this podcast will be posting on September 9th, Monday, a day before a pretty big event to happen on Tuesday, September 10th. Perhaps one of the most important events of the year. And I don't even think that that's an over-exaggeration. It's been a crazy year, that's for sure. Every year is. And just think, in a few months, we'll be recapping what's happened in this year. And certainly, what happens in the next couple of months will probably be one of the lead stories of that recap. Obviously, in less now than 2 months, we will be electing a new president. Isn't it crazy how fast 4 years goes by? people say, my gosh, you know, time really flies. And certainly when you get older, it certainly seems to. And I don't even know when that older part, I don't even know when the older is the time to start. Because, yeah, you know what, when you're a little kid, I was talking about this the other, you know, last week about the first day of school. And there's no question. I remember being in first and second or third grade. And when you have that summer vacation, school seemed long, first of all. It seemed like you were always in school. It's always relative as far as time. And it depends on whether you're enjoying something or not, right? Really, that's what makes time fly. Or if something becomes very valuable to you in terms of time. It always seems to go too fast because you're enjoying yourself, whether you're on a vacation or something like that. I remember as a young kid, as I said last week, I enjoyed school, but still, it was long. You know, September to June was what we usually did, at least for a good part of my grammar school. I remember in high school, it was a big deal because we started earlier. We started in maybe the last week of August, but we got out like in early or late, well, mid to late May. And that was always kind of cool. That was cool because sometimes it was like May 15th. And I remember in grammar school, definitely going into June. And I went to a private, a Catholic grammar school, but we went into June. We definitely did. Maybe not too far into it, but we went into June. So to get out before Memorial Day was strange, even though we started maybe a week or so before. When you start earlier of school, that seems it's a pain. But then once you get started, it's like, okay, you're in the midst of it. And then you look ahead and you go, oh, we're going to get out soon. But yeah, but still, school, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, 9 months. Whew. Long time. And then when we used to get those full 3 months from June to Labor Day, as I said. So there's a good 3 months there. And I remember at first that the summer vacation used to go and feel long. As I said on the podcast last week, there was a time towards the end of summer vacation, especially when I was in grammar school, I'd be like, I'm ready to go back. But then, as you get a little older, it that same time period, like, whoa, we're going back already? So I would say, that whole idea of that, oh, time flies, and they always, give a little caveat to that by saying, well, especially when you get older. But I would have to say that I started feeling that restlessness of time going by fast. Well, I was still in grammar school, maybe by sixth or seventh grade. Like, whoa, what happened to summer vacation? Because also you were starting to do things, you were more active, and all those activities, they make things go faster in our minds. If you're involved in a hobby or an activity, like I was playing a lot of sports, so now you've got this pre-planned schedule in front of you that they give you this schedule at the beginning of the season in May, and it goes to August, and you're like, wow, what is that? What is August? It's only May, and all of a sudden you're playing the last game. So for me, time has always seemed to fly. I do remember a couple of summers when I was young when it seemed like it was long, like it was what it was. But I think as soon as you become more active and doing things that you enjoy doing, whether it's, hobbies, sports, vacations, whatever activities that you like to do, that speeds up the, at least the impression of it. There's still the same amount of hours. There's still the same amount of days. But for some reason, it seems to go by faster. But I don't think it was when I turned 20 or 30 or 40 or even 50 where, oh, now time's going by fast. Time's been going by fast a long time for me, at least. Maybe because I am active in doing things I like to do. So I guess that's good in one way because you're doing something you enjoy. You're doing things that you enjoy to make time go by. But then you wake up one day and go, where did all those years go? But yes, this is 3.5 years. It's almost now 4 years since we voted for a president. Wow. I mean, that 2020 election between Donald Trump and President Biden, does that seem like 4 years already? There's been so much that has gone on in this country. There's so much, so many events that have happened, so many events that have happened internationally as well as nationally that you look around, you go, wow, we just voted on the presidency, it seems. And here we are again. As I said, I really do believe that this year, this podcast will post on Monday, but on Tuesday, September 10th, the first debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris will take place. And debates are always important events and elements within any campaign, some more than others. Sometimes they literally do make the difference. As much as candidates are running for years now, especially, Donald Trump announced, I'm sure, I don't know if it was the end of last year, the beginning of this year, but while they have been running longer, it really is, it seems, whether it's our attention spans, our lack of interest, whatever it is, but it really does seem that when all is said and done, these presidential campaigns, as important as they are, and you cannot undervalue the importance of who is in the White House, because it does affect your life in some way. Maybe not monumentally, but it does affect your life, and it does affect what happens around us. And so it is an important decision. And for some reason, maybe I know I'm someone, I don't like to procrastinate. Okay, I get things done. I told you many times, I have a list, and I love to scratch stuff off my list. I'm always thinking four steps ahead of things. But the fact that the majority of people in this country seem to really get involved and interested and make up their minds in some cases about who they're going to vote for president, maybe one of the most important decisions they make on a regular basis that does affect them and other people, right? It seems like it's the last 2 months, September, October, because usually the elections are in early November, so it's not even November. It's 2 months. In 2 months, people make up their minds. Now, is that because people are natural procrastinators? Is it that people just, they either don't want to, or they don't have the attention span to stay with the longevity of a campaign and pay attention to what happens on a regular basis, and like, oh, that's not until November. I don't want to worry about that. And then, oh, okay. Well, now it's September. I think I probably should start paying attention. And there's some people that probably don't make up their mind until they are in that voting booth. I can't do that. I can't do that. I am somebody that thinks ahead in most of the things I do, which probably bugs a lot of people, because I'm always thinking five steps ahead. And they're like, well, just wait. And I'm like, I know, but let's just, as I said to you many times before, have options, have contingency plans. It's great to be optimistic. It's great to say this will happen. But let's always have in mind, if it doesn't happen, then what? Because it's nice to have that plan in your back pocket, just in case. Hopefully you never use it. But to me, it seems easier to solve a problem if you've already looked ahead and came up with potential scenarios where the problem can be, and maybe you don't have the perfect solution at that time. You don't have the most thought out solution at that time, but at least you have a semblance of what you would do if. At least you have some kind of loose blueprint to work from, so you're not starting from zero in having to solve a problem a lot of times quickly without thinking clearly. If you can do a few of those steps early on, that if it does happen, you're already prepared. It's not wasted time. Oh, don't waste your time thinking about what might be. I don't think that's wasting time. I think that's preparing. And I always try to be well prepared. It's not that I don't trust that things are going to work, but we all know that oftentimes they don't. And then we're scrambling. Why scramble? But I think most people are not like that. And I think that it shows, like in a presidential election, when people's attention span, that's not until November, and then I'll start. And then sadly, in many ways, to my point, then maybe they make quick, rash judgments because they haven't been paying attention for a year, and they haven't seen a certain candidate's both advantages or pitfalls over a long period of time. They just see a condensed version of this candidate in 2 months. And certainly at the end there, those last 2 months, the candidates are trying to present the best impression of themselves possible. They are very careful not to make a mistake. They are very guarded. They are putting their best foot forward. So sometimes you don't always see the true essence of that presidential candidate just in that little snapshot of 2 months, because they are being handled and they are being packaged by their advertising, by their advisors. They are by themselves trying to be disciplined not to make a mistake. But if you look over the long haul, you'll see that they may sometimes make mistakes, and they misspeak, or they make a wrong decision. And the job of president is not 2 months old. The job of president, even with one term, is 4 years. So it seems to me that if I'm going to vote for somebody, I'd like to get a longer impression of how do they act, how do they make decisions, how do they lead over a long period of time, rather than this condensed period of time of 2 months when most people make a decision. I think it's better to see how they act in a longer term, because if you give them the presidency, they're going to have at least 4 years, which is a long time. So that campaign, a long campaign, is meant in many ways to be an educational period for both the voters and the candidates. But mostly for the voters to see, how is this person conducting themselves? How are they leading? What kind of decisions are they making over this long campaign? Because that, to me, will be a better harbinger or a better signal as to how they will be making decisions over the long haul of a 4-year term, as opposed to just paying attention in 2 months and saying, oh, well, they seem to be saying the right things, and they seem to say, well, that's good. I like that person, so I guess that's it. And boom, you vote for them. And then all of a sudden they get into office and you realize, whoa, what happened to that candidate? There's a great movie, and I think I've referenced it in the past, called The Candidate with Robert Redford. And it was in the early 70s. And it speaks to this. Peter Boyle is in it. Some real politicians are in it too. But it basically shows Robert Redford being this great candidate and how the candidate is shaped and handled and how their images change in order to become more appealing to a large group of voters. But what's the most significant is for me, and it's a very enlightening thing to see. And most, I wish people would watch The Candidate, starring Robert Redford, during a presidential election, just to see what really goes on. It's a very insightful film. But the most poignant moment of it is the last line, which is a great way to make a movie. Always leave them with a great last line. And so Robert Redford's character, Bill McKay, is it Bill McKay? I think it's Bill. Bob McKay? I think. Last name is McKay. I know that. Bill? I think it's Bill. You know, he starts off as this, you know, this is the 70s. So he starts off as this very left-wing kind of hippie-ish guy, you know, talking about the environment at the time, talking about Native Americans, talking about, you know, a lot of, you know, liberal-minded issues. And as his campaign begins, and he's up against a very conservative, old-line, right-wing, long-time senator. And so not only do their opinions clash, but their ages clash. They're just polar opposites. But as McKay begins to campaign, he starts to pick up a little interest and a little popularity, and suddenly his campaign manager Peter Boyle says, hey, we're actually making some inroads here, so we're going to have to start to broaden our appeal. And at first he is against it. Well, what about what I said, and what about this? And it's like, yeah, we'll do that, don't worry, but right now we've got to make sure that, you know, that people hear your message. And he's so slowly convinced that he needs to broaden his appeal and maybe soften some of his earlier stances on things. And in many ways, he's beginning to sell out in order to win. And we see this very idealistic candidate suddenly and slowly and sadly become just like every other candidate. And so I Bill McKay sounds right to me. I'm going to go with Bill. We see that even the most idealistic candidate gets overcome by the political machine. And we see how the candidates are handled and how their images are presented and how the narratives are written to appeal to a wide audience. But the best part is, at the end, it shows how being a candidate is completely different than being in charge of winning that office and being the office holder. And it is conveyed in the last line of the film. So Bill McKay has gone through this whirlwind of not even having a chance to win, because he's going up against a longtime senator with a lot of power and a lot of clout and a lot of name recognition. And while the Bill McKay character is the son of a former governor of California, now running for Senate, so he's got some name recognition, but he's a relatively unknown, and he's young, and he looks like a hippie, and so the odds are that he's going to get crushed by this crusty old veteran. But he changes his views. He compromises his principles in order to win. It's intoxicating. It just goes to show that even the most supposedly high-principled person can get caught up in the game and the appeal of politics. And the last line of the film is, he now has won. Hey, I'm sorry if it's a spoiler alert. The movie came out in 1972. If you haven't seen it in the last 52 years, that's not my fault. But he says to Peter Boyle, who has crafted this campaign, who took him out of oblivion and made this Cinderella story come true by beating this well-known, powerful, long-time serving senator. And he looks at Peter Boyle, Robert Redford, and says, now what? Meaning, okay, for the last 2 or 3 months, I've been talking about what I want to do when I become a senator and how I'm going to change this, how I'm going to change that and all this. But now what? How do I do this? I never thought of that. I've never done this before. How am I going to run? How am I going to be a senator? Now what? How do I do it? But that never really occurred to him. He got so caught up in the campaign, he never thought about what if he won and got the real job? Then what? And that's just not fiction. I recently saw or heard an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you'll recall that Arnold Schwarzenegger ran and won as the governor of California. And so he was this great Hollywood star, popular, and viewed as a smart guy, and he was married to Maria Shriver. He's married to a Kennedy, and so his name, because of his great popularity, his name was always kind of dropped in as a possible political figure. Let's face it, popularity is a major part of being a successful politician. First, you got to get elected. People got to like you. Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger comes into the game with some great name recognition and a very loyal fan base. And you know, California is Hollywood obsessed. And so there was a special recall election that was called in the 90s, and I think it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, and Arnold ran for governor and won. And hey, he was playing a part of a candidate, and he was surrounded by veteran political advisors who knew the game and had gotten other people elected, and they said, well, this could be a slam dunk. And he won, I think, pretty easily in this recall election. But he tells the story how different, yes, the campaign was exciting and crazy and a whirlwind, just as I said, as I'm explaining what you see in this film, The Candidate. But then he says, on his first day as governor, right? Okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and this is what this person did wrong. And it's easy, when you're on the outside, it's easy to criticize. Most people like to sit on the sidelines and criticize. They don't like to be in the position of decision maker or power. That's the hard one. You got to make those decisions. You got to show up. It's easy to sit in the sidelines and say, oh, my God, what a terrible decision that was, whether you're a coach, whether you're a politician, whether you're anything. It's easy to sit on the sidelines and criticize the people making the decisions. But then when you're put in that, you realize, it wasn't as cut and dry as I thought. The decisions weren't as black and white, or the issues weren't as black and white as I thought when I was on the outside, because now you've got a lot more information about how things work, and you've got the added pressure of having to make the right decision. It's not hypothetical anymore. It's real. The decisions that you make, especially in government, will or can affect people's lives. It can or will affect if people can put food on the table and support their kids or support themselves. The campaign seems like just this crazy game. But the actual office itself is a completely different world. And many candidates, especially first-time candidates, aren't ready for that. And so that's why I say, I think it's better to pay attention to a political campaign, especially something as important as president, over a long period of time to see how this person is acting and reacting over a long period of time of the campaign. Because that, to me, will give us a good signal as to how they will act over the long period of time of their term. No one can predict the future and what's going to happen. In fact, the only thing you can predict for a presidential tenure is how unpredictable it's going to be. And so that's why you want to elect somebody that you have confidence that they can make a difficult decision. They're not just campaigning and saying the things that you want to hear that make you feel good and for in the short term. You want to make sure that these people are capable of making tough decisions that can have long-term effects on people. You want to see how they react in pressure situations. And you're not going to see that if you just pay attention in 2 months. But I got a feeling that that's the way most people look at it, sadly. And that's when people say, why don't we have, when was the last great president we had? Well, you know what? Don't blame the candidates. The electorate has to take some responsibility, because you elected them. And how much time did you really spend on evaluating them? How much time did you really take to see what they're all about? To see, did they once think this one thing now and suddenly they flip-flopped because, well, now I have to run and get a lot more votes than I did before? Are false narratives being created? Don't blame the candidates. The candidates are there to win the election. The electorate is there supposed to weed out the fakes, to weed out the hypocrites, and to make sure that the most qualified person gets into office, especially when it comes to president. I think over the last, I don't even know how many years, we have been voting for presidents on very superficial criteria. And so don't blame the politicians. We need to take the responsibility to say we elected these people. If you get carried away by personality, most likely that personality has been created through commercials, through speeches, through very tightly and controlled media appearances on both sides. That's not one or the other here. why I think the debate this week, depending on when you're listening, if you're listening on Monday, the debate tomorrow may be the most important debate in many decades. Because we've already seen what one debate did in this election. One debate basically destroyed the candidacy of President Biden to get reelected. One debate. A couple hours. He's been president for 3.5 years. He's been in politics for more than 40 or 50. He'd been campaigning for more than a year. And 2 hours, 2 hours, completely derailed all of that. Just 2 hours. That's the reality. Because there's already questions about his mental capacity and things like that. And while this debate was meant to put those fears away, his performance at that debate did just the opposite. And even his most ardent supporters saw that either what they knew to be true and either didn't want to admit or were hiding from people because they are so against Donald Trump, even they had to admit that another 4 years and this man probably will not be able to serve. But my point is, 2 hours made the difference. One debate completely derailed an entire campaign and in many ways an entire political career in 2 hours. A 40 or 50 year career was derailed in 2 hours. And so this next debate now with his vice president, who is now the nominee, I mean, don't forget, they went through a whole primary season. I think 15 million Democrats voted for Joe Biden, and then he was unceremoniously replaced. Those 15 million votes were pretty much thrown out because of those 2 hours of that debate. The process, sadly, was kind of corrupted. But at the same time, from the Democrat standpoint, whether this was an orchestrated thing about his mental capacity or whatever it was, they realized that either the charade or the narrative was up, or that perhaps he really began to decline in the last couple of months. Whatever the truth is, it became apparent to the leaders of the Democratic Party that Joe Biden could not win. Based on a 2 hour performance. So you cannot devalue or underestimate the impact of these debates. Because that debate, instead of easing people's fears about President Biden's mental condition, it only exacerbated them to the point where he had to drop out of the race. So now here we are on the eve of another first debate. This would have been perhaps the second Trump-Biden debate, but now it's the first Trump-Harris debate. And so we have Vice President Kamala Harris suddenly anointed into this into the role of Democratic nominee at a highly choreographed and outpouring of support and hope and love and joy convention of people completely Democrat voters and supporters completely re-energized with a new candidate who they believe has a chance to beat Donald Trump. Donald Trump was way ahead in the polls based on the concerns of President Biden's mental capacity. But now that's off the table. And so suddenly Democrats have been re-energized. And the same way, a month before that, Republicans were completely energized when Biden was still in the race. Not only did they feel that it was that Trump was going to beat the incumbent, but then there's this horrific assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life, which he survives, which made the election seem almost irrelevant. While Joe Biden was not able to ease the fears of his mental capacity during the debate, but only brought them more into question by the way he performed, former President Trump has always put forth this image of a tough fighter. I will fight for you, a tough guy. And here he was, surviving an assassination attempt, which could have come within inches of killing him. And so it only reinforced his image. Biden reinforced the negatives of his image. Trump was able to embody the positives of that public image. And so this seemed like a landslide, especially. And the Republican convention was a similarly choreographed love fest and a great outpouring of affection for Donald Trump, who had just escaped an assassination attempt and death, most likely, about a week or so before. So, you know, both sides, you can look at the Republican convention and see what that became, this outpouring of admiration for Donald Trump, that he was able to survive this assassination attempt. And then Kamala Harris's embracing an ascension after what looked like a failed Biden campaign suddenly was re-energized. And that's where we stand right now. And so you cannot discount the importance of this debate. Kamala Harris has to prove that she can stand up to scrutiny. Don't forget, as I said before, both conventions are carefully choreographed to put the best foot forward of the candidates and the party and everything else. So they're both love fests, and candidates always get a bump in the polls from their respective conventions, because for 3 or 4 days the public is seeing only positive messages about both people. So it's hard not to be influenced by that. But this debate is the first time that they will go head to head and make their case. And we saw how detrimental a debate can be just 2 months ago. 2 hours changed this entire presidential campaign. So I think that you cannot debate the importance of this debate. There most likely will be another one, and whoever comes out on top of this debate will rightfully take a victory lap, and whoever doesn't do as well will always say, well, there's another one coming up. But I think it's important this year to watch these debates, because especially while we've had the opportunity to see Kamala Harris for the last 3.5 years as vice president, it's still a subordinate role. We already know Donald. What's unique about this situation, this presidential campaign, is that we don't have to wonder what Donald Trump would do. He's done it. He's been president for 4 years. He's got a record that he can either run on or run away from. It depends on your perspective. But we know what Donald Trump can do in office. He sat behind the desk for 4 years. We don't know what Kamala Harris will do on a couple of points. She's been the vice president, yes, but vice presidents mostly are subordinate. They are mostly used many times as election components than they are governing opponents. Who a president picks as his vice presidential pick many times is about getting elected. Where is that person from? What state? What their views? What kind of popularity can they bring to the ticket to get elected? Coming back to the candidate movie again. It's all about getting elected. So whoever's chosen as vice president many times may not be the best person who can govern the country, even though that's their job. If anything happens to the president, they become president. That's the irony of this. Many times a vice presidential pick is not picked to say who's the best person who could be president in case something happens. Once again, the emphasis is on we first have to get elected, then we'll worry about it. Kamala Harris was chosen as Joe Biden's vice president in order to reinforce to the Democratic Party a more liberal-minded part because Joe Biden was being viewed as more moderate. And plus, she's a woman, and she's a woman of color. So they're trying to play to the far left part of the Democratic base to energize them. Hey, look who he's picking. Because obviously a vice president is in the room. The president will depend how big or small their role will be in the government. But at least they're there. And then, of course, the vice president, in most cases, is the most likely next candidate when the sitting president either drops out like Joe Biden, which is why Kamala Harris rose, or if their term is up. But that's the irony. The vice president is supposed to be the second best qualified person for the job, the governing. But most times the vice president is chosen for the election. And this is my point, once again, about long-term and short-term, about being a candidate and being a leader, being a candidate and being someone in the job. They're two separate things. Getting elected is one thing and governing is another. And some of the best candidates have been the worst presidents because they don't have the experience of leading, but they're charismatic. They're good speakers. They've been carefully crafted in their speeches and in their images and their narratives and their stories and their commercials. I don't know if I finished the story about Arnold Schwarzenegger. When Arnold Schwarzenegger won, he said in this interview, his first day in office, he won the election. They crafted the narrative. Arnold Schwarzenegger's popular. They put him in. And he said on his first day, he was in the governor's office. All his aides had left. And he was sitting at the desk. He is the governor of California, as he used to say. And he didn't know what to do. It was like, when he said this, I just thought of Robert Redford. Now what? And that's basically what he said. Now what? And he said he spent the first couple of hours, if not the first day, sitting in the governor's chair in the governor's office, doodling. He didn't know what to do. He knew how to run. He knew how to be a candidate. But he didn't really know how to govern. Never did it before. And that's what this is all about. We have to pick someone that's not a great candidate. We have to pick somebody who's a great, who has the capacity to be a good leader and a good decision maker and a good person who can administer the government, who can be in the role, in the job. Not the best one who could get elected to the job. That's where the emphasis is, though. So that's why these debates this year, I think, are so important. Because we've seen, as I said before, how a debate can completely reveal the truth. Joe Biden's mental capacity is clearly diminishing, and we don't know for how long it's been diminishing now. We don't know how well scripted and how hidden from the public his real mental capacity has been for the last 4 months or the last 4 years. But that debate certainly validated the questions about his mental capacity. And boom, within a couple of weeks, he was gone. 2 hours derailed a campaign, derailed a presidency, and in many ways, derailed a political career. On the flip side of that, these debates, the one that will be happening this week on September 10th, has great implications. Because while Kamala Harris has been around for 3.5 years, she hasn't really had a major role in governing. We really don't know how she will react. We know how Donald Trump will be president. He's already been president. But we've only had 6 weeks, and ultimately we'll have maybe 2 or 3 months rather than a year or even 3 years since she's been vice president to really get a sense of how she would be president. So what we've got to depend on are these debates where she's making her case. And I think that puts a lot of pressure not only on Kamala Harris, it puts a lot of pressure on, as I said before, the electorate to be able to make the right decision. Now, look, I know this is a very divisive country and this is a very divisive election. And for the most part, most people have made up their minds already. The people that are Donald Trump fans are dyed-in-the-wool Donald Trump fans. They would never vote for Kamala Harris. And the people that are Kamala Harris fans, for the most part, are more anti-Trump opponents. They hate Trump and are beginning to try to warm up to Kamala Harris. But they were going to vote against Trump regardless of who was running against him. But now they have to reconcile their own consciences, maybe to say, well, okay, am I voting somebody that's competent to hold this office? We have to look at her tenure as vice president and get some kind of an idea of that. We have to hear what she says. We have to see what decisions she's made. You have to remember, a lot of people forget this. At the end of the day, Kamala Harris could be elected president, no question about that. When she ran against Joe Biden for the 2020 election, she dropped out before the first primary. She was the first candidate of about 17 or 18 or 19 Democratic candidates to drop out. The first one. Her support was so weak, she never even got to the January primaries, the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primaries in January. She dropped out before any primaries. And now the primary season was over. And she will obviously not have gotten one vote in a primary election because Joe Biden was the Democratic candidate in the primaries and he got 15 million votes. Now you could say, well, they voted for Biden and Harris. She was on the ticket. But most people are voting for Joe Biden. There's a big difference between president and vice president. One is real and one is ceremonious until you may have to take over. So there's a lot at stake here. While Kamala Harris has been the vice president for 3.5 years, she hasn't really distinguished herself as a major policy or leader on a lot of issues over the last 3.5 years. So that needs to be the determination. Is this person qualified? We know what Donald Trump will, you know, as a president, we don't have to wonder. He's been president. Either you like that or you don't. That's clear cut. But Kamala Harris, we don't know. And so that's why these debates are going to be very important to see how the candidate performs and how the electorate perceives that performance. Because as I said, when Joe Biden gave such a horrendous performance, it was clear within the first 10 or 15 minutes that this was a man that was in a lot of trouble. And so we cannot underestimate the importance. I don't, like I said before, I don't think we can debate the importance of these debates. For the next 2 months, we have to make a decision as a country. And these debates, at least, are the best forum that we have, even though they're imperfect. They are a microcosm of how at least the candidate thinks, how the candidate acts, the impression and the image that they put forth, how fast they are in terms of thinking, in terms of the knowledge that they have at their fingertips, and you hopefully can get a sense of how decisive they are. It's not the best thing to base your entire vote on a couple of hours, but sadly, that's the way we seem to do it. We don't seem to have the attention span to pay attention for a year of these campaigns. So they come down to many times these debates. The most famous, of course, happening right here in Chicago in 1960 with the Kennedy-Nixon debates. Nixon was certainly the favorite in the among the two. He was the vice president. Once again, I'm telling you, vice president, sitting vice president, right? Well, he's been around. But John Kennedy proved to be much more prepared, much more calm and cool, under pressure, much more articulate, certainly at the end of the day, much more confident. And even though, and of course, you know, the image on television plays a huge role, interesting fact is that people that listened to the debate on the radio, this was 1960, still a lot of people did not even have televisions. This was the first televised debate. 1960, it's hard to believe that. But there was a time when not every house had a television. I know that's crazy to think about, folks. And it wasn't all that many years ago, but it's true. Those who listened to the debate of Kennedy Nixon on the radio felt that Richard Nixon won the debate based on his answers, based on his poise, based on what they heard. However, those who watched the debate on television thought Kennedy won it because he looked calmer, he looked more confident, he spoke with authority, he was articulate, and he has the full package. President Nixon had a 5 o'clock shadow, and he was sweating on his upper lip, and he looked kind of disheveled, whereas Kennedy looked like a movie star. And that's really when image took over politics, because they saw how image could sway an election. So there have been some debates that have had huge, huge impacts on the results of presidential campaigns. And I believe this year, because of the circumstances, these debates take on a much heavier importance. Kamala Harris, I don't know if there's going to be three debates or two, we'll see, but certainly I think there's two, has 3 months, now 2 months, to prove that she can be president. She didn't have to go through a year-long election or campaign. She didn't have to go through the primary system. Now, you could say that's probably not fair. She's kind of been anointed. Well, you know, there's questions of whether Joe Biden should have even run at the beginning because of his mental capacity. But he was adamant, and so were his supporters, because they felt that he was the only one who could beat Donald Trump. That he could run, that he was capable of another term. Now, that's in question. So much so that he had to drop out. So Kamala Harris comes into this. You can say, well, she got a free ride. That's one argument. Well, she got a free ride. She didn't have to go through the primary process. She didn't have to. She hasn't been vetted truly. She hasn't been overly scrutinized on her views, on her policies, because she's been in the background. And now suddenly, with 2 or 3 months, with not a lot of time for people to truly get a sense of who she is, she's anointed into this candidate nominee position, and she can slide right in. Well, we'll see if she can do that. And that's what these debates are going to be all about. We know what Donald Trump is. You either like him or you don't. For some people, it's enough to vote for Kamala Harris just because they hate Donald Trump. That seems to be, in many ways, the Democratic strategy. Anyone but Trump. Some people have jokingly said they didn't care what kind of mental capacity Joe Biden had. He wasn't Donald Trump. That's a little cynical. I mean, Donald Trump has been portrayed by the Democrats as this existential threat to democracy, but I guess you could argue that the Democrats circumvented democracy by not allowing the person who went through the primary process, 15 million votes were thrown away in an instant. And Kamala Harris was immediately lifted up and ascended into the nominee without ever getting a vote by anyone in terms for being president. She never won a primary vote in the 2020 election. She dropped out before the first primary because her support was so low. And she wasn't voted during the primary season as the top of the ticket candidate. Yes, she was on the ticket with Joe Biden, but people were voting for Joe Biden. Or were they just voting against Donald Trump? And that's what these debates, I think, are going to be centered on. And that's why I think they're so important, is we have to decide on who's going to run this country for the next 4 years. And we saw that just 2 months ago, thankfully, that these debates revealed the truth. Because we were not voting for Joe Biden on what he had done. We were voting on Joe Biden for another 4 years. And if his mental capacity isn't at tip-top shape now, what's it going to be like in 4 years when he's 84 or 85 years old? So that debate, I argue, was invaluable. It brought out the truth. No matter how many people were trying to hide it, whether it was been going on for 3 years or 2 months, it doesn't matter. That's reality. And it was proven during a two-hour debate. And so now we will see what will be proven in the next debate with a new candidate, two people squaring off for the first time, one a known entity and one a semi-entity trying to distinguish and validate themselves to the people. A lot at stake, not only for the candidates. I can't impress that enough. This debate is important for the electorate. Don't complain that the president is bad if you either A, didn't vote, or B, voted for somebody who you really didn't know or understand. There is that old adage, we get the government that we deserve, meaning we voted these people in. Did we really take the time? Did we really carefully consider? Did we really focus and think about the long-term ability and qualifications of these people as opposed to, oh, they look nice. Oh, they smile nice. Oh, they have a nice family. That doesn't make somebody good at their job. And this is the most important job in the world. We've seen that. Just in the last 2 years, we've seen wars and we've seen bloody attacks and we've seen inflation. We've seen a lot of things. Who becomes president is important. It does affect our lives in some way. We have a tremendous power collectively and a tremendous responsibility collectively. We shouldn't make a rash decision. We shouldn't spend just 2 months or two debates, watching two debates, deciding who we want to vote for. But sadly, that seems to be the way that we do it. And so if that's the way you do it, if that's the way we do it as a country, then yeah, this week is really important. This week can maybe make or break who's going to be the next president. So whether even you're not politically inclined, it doesn't matter. You live in this country. You have a responsibility to this country. So I urge you to watch these debates, listen to these debates, analyze these debates, so that when you vote, you're voting for the person that you think is the most qualified amongst the two to govern this country in the next 4 years. The worst thing you want is a candidate who will turn to their political advisor after they win and say, now what? And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 433. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.